This is Coda Radio, episode 569 for May 8th, 2024. Well, hello, friend. Welcome into Jupiter Broadcasting's weekly talk show, taking a pragmatic look at the art and the business of software development and the world of technology. My name is Chris, and joining me every single week, it's our globetrotting host, Mr. Dominic. Hello, Mike.
Hello.
Hello, sir. Now, you just got in.
Yep, just got off the plane.
Now, I don't know if this is connected, but were you on a United Airlines flight by any chance?
I was.
Huh. Because I see that a man was just hit with a $20,000 fine for being belligerent on the airplane, and according to the TSA, this person is has been let go and is now home, but has to pay them $20,000. This happened on United Airlines. You know anything about this?
Are you implying it was me?
I mean, you know, I'm not saying when I hear the term belligerent on an airplane, I think of you, but...
Oh, no, I'm a great passenger because I sleep.
Oh, you do. You can do the sleep thing.
Huh? I sleep the entire flight, yep.
I got to be a little drunk to sleep. I can't sleep sober on the plane.
It's the opposite. See, if I have something, I think it's the sugar content keeps me awake.
Oh.
But yeah, I know I slept. I just came back from NYC API days or API days NYC.
Okay.
Yeah, it was pretty nice. Got a ticket to that courtesy of Rapid API. Yeah, I have a few things about the show. It was a little, I will say, the folks who put it on maybe need to be a little more conservative in how many people they allow as attendees.
Oh.
Because it got to the point where they were over capacity and you had to wait quite a long time to actually get in. And I spent a good part of it with a number of other people basically doing an alt conf at a local cafe.
No kidding.
And then
no.
Yeah.
I mean, how many people are we talking? Do you know?
I don't know what the actual legal capacity for the space was, but there was when I got there, there were quite a few of us just waiting in the lobby.
I mean, are we talking like total attendees in like the tens of thousands?
No, I don't think so.
You know, it's funny because I just did Linux Fest Northwest, and I would bet you there was 500-600 people at the conference.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a little bit different scale. There's pretty much a spot for everybody at that size.
Yeah, I was surprised. I mean, it was an interesting setup, but certainly a success for the folks putting the concert on. I mean, if you have so many people that you can't fit them, that's...
Yeah. And did you get anything out of it?
I got a couple takeaways. So, one of them was so banal that I was kind of like, ugh. But so that they had kind of two groups of people going, right? Like, I guess it's three: technical people, people on the IT management side, and then developers. And just the level of sphincter clenching fear among the first two of those folks, particularly the first one, the just business folks, regarding security. Like, I felt, I'm not going to like name names, but I felt there were couple vendors there who were basically using scare tactics.
Oh, yeah. Okay, interesting. I've definitely seen that in my day, so it's great to hear that's still going on. Meanwhile, good backups and data restoration practices would solve for 90% of malware, ransomware instances. That's fine.
Yeah, it was, you know, the conference was focused on, like, leveraging third-party APIs. One of the main sponsors putting up the conference was a company called Rapid API. Thanks again for the ticket, folks. They allow you as a developer to basically break off an API that other developers or organizations can consume and pay you, right? So they're like an app store for APIs almost. So, but there was, of course, you know, the security consultants were there. You know, it's funny, right? It's, you would think we were a hop and a skip and a jump away from your chatbot who's collecting leads through HubSpot, from that to like hacking all your systems and taking over your organization. It's just so ludicrous.
That's what they're pitching it?
Yeah, and the normal data leak stuff. I remember these security bullshit things, like the, no offense to the Microsoft dudes, but that the like Microsoft MVP consultant guys used to be like, oh, well, if you use Apache or an open source, God knows where your data is going to end up.
Oh, yeah, that used to drive us open source heads crazy. Correct. Linux users would get into a boil over
that.
Yeah,
so it's, but it was definitely effective. I mean, those sessions were booked. So,
you know, no one gets fired for being too careful. And it's an easy sell to management. Hey, I'm going to go to this conference And one of the things I'm going to be sure I do while I'm there is I'm going to listen to this talk that, you know, goes into API security or whatever it might be.
Well, it's also, I found over, you know, the years, it's an effective way for managers who want to either retain headcount or just capital, don't want a project, you know, want it to be allocated to a different division or whatever team, for them to basically kill projects. So, oh, we can't do that because what if this third-party vendor gets a hold of customer data and you're like a printer company, right? So,
you know, we really, what the lesson here is that you and I should have opened up some sort of security consulting chatbot company a couple of years ago when we saw the direction this stuff was going.
Yeah.
And just did a, you know, just did a hard focus on security.
It's funny, just real quick, when I got back on the train after at the end of the day in New York, I was thinking there's probably a niche for like a small consultancy of, quote, you know, automation security consultants, where all you do is you give managers who want to say no to other divisions' projects reasons to say no.
Yeah, you got to be careful with the marketing because you can't just be like right out front saying that's what you do. But you word it in a way where those that are looking for such a thing will recognize and employ your services.
Right.
That's, man, that'd be a great business. And I love saying no to people's ideas. It's one of my new things, you know. No, take more time. Don't do that. Don't. I mean, that's all I'm all about that these days.
Let's be. You gotta do your thoughtful triangle, right, with your fingers. Let's really consider the implications thoughtfully here.
Yeah. So, but I guess what I'm taking away from your takeaway is there's like an entire meta industry sitting above everybody's APIs that's trying to come up with ways to pay for usage, discovery. Like the bundling and selling of different companies' APIs is now its own business, and it's a big business.
Yeah, it seems like it's a pretty big business. It's interesting, right? Because it on the one hand, a thing I don't like about going the rapid API route is it is the app storeification of these, you know, the functionality, which one of the like a very common sales tactic for, you know, things that are automation is to offer something relatively cheap and then kind of, they call it land and expand. And I wonder if going through like a rapid API or any one of these other, should we call them stores or like exchanges?
Middleware store?
Yeah, middleware stores. Like, do you really own the customer at that point? Can you have the opportunity to get in the meeting and like, oh, we also offer custom software development, right?
Right. You're like, you're asking where do they extract future monetization from, as their shareholders will inevitably demand that they continue to grow and expand, or if not shareholders, their investors.
Well, not only that, but like for the ISVs of the world, like us, right? You know, you have things that are profitable and things that are still relatively profitable, but you know, but they're your foot in the door offering. And I almost feel like doing something like that might jeopardize the ability to get larger projects, I guess is what I'm saying.
Mm, yeah, I could see that too. I guess it's inevitable in a way if just about every service and every large size business needs to have an API. I guess there was always going to be API brokers. It's just so weird to me.
Well, and being a middleman is a great business, right? Because if you think about it.
Yeah.
Key point is they are not hosting your code. You are still hosting your own API code. They're just kind of the exchange that handles payment and authentication and stuff like that. So,
coder.show/membership. Head on over there and use the promo code DarthJarJar to take $1 a month off your membership for a year. And you can contribute to the show directly. For new members, existing members, those of you that want to reactivate a subscription. Let's see. I got a report right here from the folks behind the scenes. Got a whole staff here working just to monitor this, of course. We have one new member, Daniel. In the last 2 weeks, we picked up one new member. Why do I need a 2-page report to tell me that we have one member? What? Yeah, well, that's not great. Thanks. Great promo code, guys. You can really see it's driving the sales. This is because the audience doesn't want to use an authorized promo code. See? Shouldn't have used an unauthorized promo code. All right, well, we'll keep Darth Jar Jar going. Let's see if we can't get a few new subscriptions at the beginning of May. You could be our top of May subscriber. Head over to coder.show/membership. Use the promo code Darth Jar Jar, one word, get a buck off the membership per month. Throw this stupid report away. One member. Thank you, Daniel, for being our one member. Maybe they missed somebody. A 2-page report. I doubt they missed somebody. But if they did, my apologies. But it looks like one new member. probably a couple of stinkers, I guess. I don't know. Thank you, everybody else who is a member. This is for you. Membership. It's great. Membership. Coder.show/membership. Support the show during the adpocalypse. And, of course, you can also boost in and support each individual production with the Podcasting 2.0 app and get all the new Podcasting 2.0 features as well. Coder.show/membership. Great AI, Mike. It's just around the corner. And I remember when GPT-3 came out and we saw chat.openai.com, whatever it is, launch, and everybody started using it. The free account was just GPT-3. And almost immediately they started teasing how much better GPT-4 was. And so many models were being compared against GPT-4 as they came out. And of course, as a pleb that doesn't pay for OpenAI's services, I'm still on GPT-3. I haven't even seen GPT-4. But I've noticed a trend. I've noticed a trend by the OpenAI crew, and particularly by Sam Altman. And it's this always kind of kicking the goal a little bit further down, moving it just a little bit further, because the mission is so important, the end result is so incredible, that it's okay that we just are always perpetually building. And it doesn't matter what it costs. And I'm not saying that. Sam Altman is saying that.
Whether we burn $500 million a year or $5 billion or $50 billion a year, I don't care. I genuinely don't. As long as we can, I think, stay on a trajectory where eventually we create way more value for society than that, and as long as we can figure out a way to pay the bills, like, we're making AGI. It's going to be expensive. It's totally worth it.
It's totally worth it, Mike. It doesn't matter how much it costs, because they're making AGI. Now, come and invest. Like, is it possible that the technological revolution that would be unleashed by AGI could be worth burning $50 billion a year? No amount is too much?
Yeah, wow. That seems very Lex Luthor-esque to me. Do you not see a little Michael Cera there?
I totally do, actually.
just the economics at that scale are difficult for me to even fathom. But also the just casual delivery of, like, we're going to... But does he have to say that? See, I saw the same video and I was like, okay, is this just, he's taken so much money, he has to say it's going to be, like, not Skynet, but, like, world-changing, right? Or does he believe it?
I think I have a little bit of bacon. Before I fry it, I'm going to play one more thing he said in this video. We'll link the full video in the show notes like we always do. But it's this always moving the goalpost. And I'll play the clip and then I'll explain what I mean.
ChatGPT is not phenomenal. Like, ChatGPT is, like, mildly embarrassing at best. GPT-4 is the dumbest model any of you will ever have to use again by a lot. But, you know, it's, like, important to ship early and often. And we believe in iterative deployment.
See, that's not what he was saying about GPT-4 a few months ago. It's always this next thing we're about to do is going to be so game-changing that it's worth using the thing we have right now. It's worth all of this market value. It's this, like, it's this perpetual bubble that he can pump and drive, because the thing is, it's like this carrot you never quite get to. It's always just out in front of you. That's my bacon about it. He knows what he's doing. Mm. He knows he's pumping a bubble up. Maybe he gets some sort of sick satisfaction of being the creator of one of the largest tech bubbles in history.
So, because it feels like he, at these numbers, right, with the Microsoft money and just the, well, you know, 50, what was it, 50 billion a month or something he said, a year?
50 billion a year. And to your point, Microsoft, Meta, and Alphabet disclosed that they had spent $32 billion combined on data centers and other capital expenses just in Q1.
Yeah.
To put that in perspective, Exxon spent $26.3 billion for the entire year last year to get oil out of the ground.
It's got to be a grand slam or a strikeout here. I just don't see any plausible, kind of like boring middle-of-the-road solution. And what does a grand slam actually look like? I mean, is it... I would think to justify the scale of investment, it would have to be so game-changing that it would have, like, large societal implications, right? It would be tons of people out of work. It would have to be on that scale to justify the investment. Or is it just going to be something that, you know, is always... It's kind of like it's always 6 months away, right? Or a year away, whatever it's going to be. Because I almost feel like it's going to be that. It's, oh, GTP4, wait till you see GTP5. GTP5, wait till you see GTP6.
I think it is that. I think it's the latter. It's always the next. Yeah, just wait till you see GPT-5. Just wait till you see GPT-6. I think it's hoping that they fake it until they make it. That's got to be the idea. And I'd love the audience to boost in to see if they have a different take on it. You know, there is, because there's such a scale of investments that would be required to actually pull this off, right? Larry Fink, you know who Larry Fink is. He's the CEO of BlackRock. BlackRock manages over tens of trillions in funds. He was the driver of ESG. He's now, they've completely bailed on their ESG funds. Their ESG ETF is totally down. And he's all about energy, because in order to build AI, we need energy.
And I do believe to properly build out AI, we're talking about trillions of dollars of investing. So data centers today could be as much as 200 megahertz. And they're now talking about data centers that are going to be 1 gigawatt. That's what powers a city. There was one tech company that I spoke to the CEO last week who said right now with all their data centers is about 5 gigawatts. By 2030, they need 30 gigawatts. 30. The amount of power that's needed to use AI has huge impact on society. Where's that power going to come from? Are we going to take it off the grid? What does it mean for elevated energy prices for everybody else if it's that? I think it's going to represent some huge societal questions that we have not addressed, the negative side. Forget about the use of it, but just the generation of it is massive power. Okay, but that is a huge investment opportunity.
Oh, and that's where they see it. That's where, you know, it is a massive problem. But if it's a problem we all collectively believe in, it can be solved. It can be an opportunity. In fact, it could even solve declining populations.
I could argue in the developed countries, the big winners are countries that have shrinking populations. Okay, that's something that most people never talked about. You know, we always used to think shrinking population is a cause for negative growth. But in my conversations with the leadership of these large developed countries that have xenophobic immigration policies, they don't allow anybody to come in. Shrinking demographics. These countries will rapidly develop robotics and AI and technology. And if the promise, I didn't say it's going to happen, but if the promise of all that transforms productivity, which most of us think it will, we'll be able to elevate the standard of living of countries and the standard of living of individuals, even with shrinking populations.
The reason why I play these clips is because you can also go online and find clips of Mark Zuckerberg saying it's going to cure cancer and pretty much all of the world's ills. I think what we're witnessing is a society of people that depend on bubbles. All of their riches come from loose money and investment like crazy and just hype, hype, hype to get people to spend tons of money on things that are always going to change the world. And everything is always about the impact it's going to have, what a massive game changer this will be for the world. I mean, you can even hear them when they talk about Facebook. They can explain it as this incredible tool for connecting humanity. They don't like all meet together in a smoky room. Well, some of them might, and say, let's all go in on this bubble together. But you have people that now have entire careers out of opportunistic bubble pumping, and they recognize the signs and they're all in. And Altman, he's figured out this playbook as well, you know, because he spent time at Y Combinator. Like, he's seen this playbook. And so they're all just going as hard as possible, because right now, that's the only thing really driving this bubble. The functionality is not fantastic. It's okay. It's okay. It's useful. But the system requirements are astronomical right now still. We just quite haven't gotten there. We probably will, but they have to keep the money train going. And so Larry Fink, Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, of course, Sam Altman, and soon at WWDC, Apple will join in as well. They'll all pump in the same direction because their incentives all align to do it. I don't know if they believe what they say. I don't know if they believe that we don't need to worry about population decline because we're going to have AI and robots. I don't know if they believe it's going to cure cancer, but my bacon is that just by natural alignment of incentives, you have all of these people that are just saying they're just trying to one up each other, essentially, with the most outlandish impact possible that AI could have.
Maybe. I also like the Freudian slip where he says decreasing employment instead of population the first time. That's
yeah.
Because I sort of feel like I definitely get what you're saying about like they're just pumping up a bubble, right? It's a big hot air balloon, and they're blowing that helium as hard as they can. But just
yeah, because they're all floating on it.
That does seem probable. But just if it's actually not, it isn't the more likely outcome incredible job displacements and, you know, increased unemployment, increased income stratification, right?
I think it's rooted in probably an underlying panic about the state of the West. Like you hear them talk about population decline. The things that they're concerned about are like BlackRock has gone so hard into this Bitcoin ETF. They now have the number one Bitcoin ETF, and it went for like a historical 74 days straight of inflows. Massive success, one of the most successful Bitcoin or one of the most successful ETF launches ever, and it happens to be a Bitcoin ETF. When asked why, Larry Fink said, because you need a tool that you can hedge against sovereign debt risk. In other words, they're concerned about the U.S. debt. And I think a lot of tech companies are. I think BlackRock is. And so they're pivoting on things that are going to optimize the economy, because the only way out of this hole is either massive inflation that runs hot for a super long time and devalues the debt, or the economy produces well and makes good money and has good growth. And if we start making good money, the government revenue goes up and we have a lot better position. So they always say, grow your way out of it. Well, how are you going to grow your way out of it when the labor market participation rate's going down? You need the machines to do it. So I think they have serious concerns about the money system. I think they have serious concerns about the workforce and the declining population and the boomers that are retiring, that are never going to re-enter the workforce again, the largest generation. And I think they're looking at what's going to keep their economies viable and everything else like that. And they think this is the only solution. And so some of them are doing it because they think this is the only thing that's going to save us, is to just bring this into the economy and make the economy, you know, 100x more productive, as you'll hear some of them say. I think that's why some of them might be doing it. And I think others, like Fink, are cynical bastards. He went right up to the line with ESG, pumped ESG. You can find clips of saying that Larry Fink said, just a few years ago, the next 1,000 unicorn startups that are going to be worth more than $1 billion in no time are all going to be ESG companies. And now they're shutting down their ESG initiatives, and they're making this hard pivot to we need dense energy sources, which is not solar and wind. Like, this is a massive pivot, and AI is the like engine that's going to help them make it, because the ESG ride is over. And it's just right here in front of all of us, and all of the plebs just sit back and go, oh, okay. You know, they don't even really fully understand what's happening. You see all of these different tech CEOs and figures all aligning in the same direction, all pumping this thing in the same way, all for these various motivations that I can observe. And I just feel like Sam is like the lead hype man. And so like, if Larry says something crazy, Sam's got to say something even crazier, right? Like, it's just $7 trillion in funding for building chips, and we'll spend $50 billion a year just R&D-ing AGI. Like, he just keeps going, and they try to one-up each other with it. That's what I see. And then what's wild about this, Mike, is the practical use case, while decent, is it more useful than an EV right now, or is it more useful than, you know, being able to build an iPhone? I don't think so. I mean, it might be one day, the potential might be, but if you were to actually measure it by its usefulness in the market, I think the iPhone as a product is probably more useful right now.
Right.
But if you were to ask Wall Street, the only thing they're funding is these AI stuff. In fact, Apple was on a huge decline until they announced a historically large stock buyback program, and that turned things around. But then they came out with a god-awful quarter. It's just incredible how upside down things are. And I guess what I'm trying to get to is, if the audience agrees with me or if I'm just way off on my own thing here, and I'd love them to explain it either way. If this is truly a bubble, then how do you explain the actual practical usefulness and potential here that does seem to be there? So it can't 100% be a bubble, but there must be some sort of median we could return to. Or maybe I'm way off. Maybe GPT-5 is going to be incredible and make GPT-4 look stupid. Maybe AGI is worth $50 billion a year.
Maybe our robot overlords will kill you once they hear this.
Oh, dang it. You're right. I got to think ahead like that.
Cylons, man.
I know. You know what, Mr. Dominic? You always are playing the long game. Playing the long game.
47 boosts to go.
Tampa Tech Trekkie boosted in. He's playing the long game as well, and he's our baller booster this week for 40,000 sats.
Hey, Rich Lobster!
Oh, the baller amount's sliding, but I appreciate it. I think Tampa Tech Trekkie did the math and figured that out. He said, in response to the job change email, I got into tech after completing my associates right before the Great Recession. I saw some people coming to tech from fields where they were managers but had no experience and might have only had an A-plus cert. I was shocked by how many of these folks just expected to be a lateral move and then just make the same salary, despite working with people with years or decades of experience. It may sound cold, but should this be the expectation? It depends on why they're being hired, I think, Tampa Tech. If they're being hired for their management expertise, then maybe that's fair that they get a similar salary. If they're getting paid for their tech skills, then their years in management don't really factor in as much. You agree?
Yeah, I would say that's pretty fair, right? Unless somehow like their domain expertise from their previous jobs maybe is valuable. If it's like, I can't think of a case where they wouldn't be taking a step down if they're starting as a junior person in tech after being a manager elsewhere.
They also wanted to spread a little bit of the Ruby gospel, but noted that their first language was great.
Mm.
It was Perl, but it was in the 90s and 2000s. It is great.
Yeah, Ruby is very Perl-esque, very inspired by Perl.
I feel like I don't want to talk about Perl like it's not being used, because then I'm going to trigger some Perl person. But, I mean, you just don't hear as many people talking about it anymore.
Other than John Syracuse, yes.
Jeremy Ross comes in with 31,500 sats. Pew, pew, pew. No message, though. Boosting from Castomatic and just sending some support. Thank you, Jeremy. Really appreciate it. Ty Alaskan comes in with 31,337 sats. Pew, pew, pew. I just wanted to follow up on my experience as a wary dev making the time to play with Nix. I can define my whole dev environment in a shell.nix file in the project root, and whenever I clone the repo, I'm just a Nix shell away. That's a command you can do. Away from having all of my familiar tools. It's super useful for a guy who spends most of his time developing over an SSH connection. So Ty Alaskan, I want to underscore your point here. What you're saying is, with Nix, it is really easy to throw a very simple YAML-like config file up on your Git repo. And then you can just, with one command, invoke an entire dev environment with all the dependencies and all the tooling. It configured the way you like them out of the gate. So everything's ready to go, totally configured. And once you have that set, you specify in that YAML file, you do one command, the Nix shell command, and you specify to the path here, and boom, it creates that environment. Nix is super powerful when it comes to installing and managing software and creating the exact environment you need with all the dependencies considered. And then what it lets you do that other Linux systems don't let you do is, say you want to remove a tool that maybe has lots of libraries and lots of dependencies. Typically in Linux, like, that can be a little sketch. It might uninstall the wrong thing. Famously, Linus from Linus Tech Tips accidentally installed the desktop when he was trying to install Steam. Like, you know, the dependencies can be a little sketch. So a lot of people just leave stuff installed on Linux once they have it installed, especially stuff that reaches deep in your system. With Nix, you're building an environment. And so you can remove that thing, whatever it might be, with all its tentacles. And what Nix does is builds you a new environment totally configured where that thing never existed. And then you switch into that environment, and it's like it was never there. And where, as a longtime Linux user, this is so neat, is you can move between desktop environments, Plasma, Pop, GNOME, whatever. The new LXQt just came out. When you make that switch in your config, it's like you were never a GNOME system when you're on Plasma, or vice versa. It's so clean because you never were. You are now in an environment where that never existed. If you think about how useful that is from a development environment standpoint, and how powerful that is, be like Ty Alaskan and go try it out sometime. And you don't have to be on Linux. You can run Nix Package Manager and get all those benefits I just mentioned on macOS. Maybe you might want to try it instead of Brew sometime. Anybody out there? You know what I'm saying? Just put it out there in general. In general.
Spicy.
My PSA. I think it's something you should know, so there you go. There you go. Didn't plan on that. Thank you, Ty Alaskan. Appreciate that boost. Got me going on that one. The Ohm, The gnome? Probably the gnome. Comes in with 20,000 sats.
Coming in hot with the boost.
Linux has finally made it mainstream. I live in rural Ohio, and the man pumping my septic noticed my Linux cloud servers hoodie. He's been learning about Linux for, of course, his Steam Deck.
Naturally.
I am shocked. This is how the conversation usually goes. When somebody, you know, I'm getting my hair cut or I'm riding an Uber or, you know, I'm just chatting with somebody at the, you know, at the grocery, whatever it is, right? You bump into somebody you don't know. And the conversation, if you've been talking for a minute, inevitably goes, what do you do for a living? And so then I try to, you know, oh, I have a podcast business. Oh, yeah, a podcast, huh? What do you podcast about? Well, you know, Linux and development, open source, and, oh, Linux. And then they're like, what? You know Linux? I'm always surprised. I don't mean to stereotype, but I'm just, it's, you know, from 20 years, it's just not been common that people know what Linux is. We were parked, though, at Linux Fest Northwest in my RV, in the parking lot, overnight. And the first night, one of the neighbors came up and comes knocking on the door, knock, knock, knock. Excuse me, are you with the group? And I said, the Linux Fest group? No, the group with all of the rigs. Are you with that group? No, we're the only rig here. There's nobody else here. Oh, okay, because they were running their generators. And it was really, I just went on this whole story, right? And wanted to make sure I wasn't going to be loud and partying all night. And then she says, what'd you say you were with, that Linux group? What's Linux? I had to explain to her what Linux was. So yeah, it still happens both ways, actually. Yeah, but that's pretty cool. The guy, you know what? Steam Decks are pretty great. They are bringing Linux to the masses, aren't they? Max Power comes in with 8,000 sats.
I'm a duck, D-U-K duck, loaded with talent.
Boosting to support you guys through the adpocalypse. I realize boosts are a fun way to get clips of Chris saying funny things that he may not otherwise say. Like, say this. Hey, Mike, I'm going to buy a Apple Vision Pro goggles for you and for me. I would never call them goggles.
Goggles.
I would never.
Well, if they're goggles, I will absolutely have to go swimming in them.
I know. If they got down to goggle size, that would be great. That would be fantastic. I'll tell you what. I still have the Quest, you know, and I'm just thinking maybe that was the better route all the way. It just might have been the better way because it's got the games. And now they're working on like OS features to be more competitive with the Apple Vision Pro. And they got this whole Open Horizon platform thing now. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be a good fight. MSC0135 comes in with 3,072 sats.
Make it so.
And they wanted to strongly advocate. It was a very long boost, but I read it all. And they wanted to strongly advocate for the absolute primacy of moral law in human conduct. No agreements, contracts, or obligations can justify the fundamental ethical principles. If you despair of the current state of the world, ever-changing, and believe resistance is hopeless, it is better to act in accordance with how the world should be rather than how it actually is, to maintain and increase your own notability and character. Since notability is value itself, good deeds still make the world better, even if they have no effect. In other words, don't compromise on employment contracts if they go against your morals. That must have been so much to type out. I can't even imagine how you did that, Emissy. Would you tell me how you boosted and tell me how you managed to type out all of that? That was incredible. DG at PTC comes in with 5,000 sats.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
In hindsight, I can see why Apple hasn't been investing into AI. There's no realistic return on investment for fine-tuning LLMs for individual customers. What are they going to do? Charge $20 a month for Siri? No one is going to do that. You know what's funny? Side note, Mike. Apple, I think Apple not properly addressing Siri's functionality is coming home to roost in 2024 way more than we would have ever thought.
Yeah.
I hear this all the time. Every time somebody brings up Apple's AI capabilities, Siri is the punchline every single time. They also think, you know, spending billions on GPUs probably won't pay itself in iPhone sales. More broadly, I don't think there's much real money to be made in chatbots in general. I think Apple will integrate it as features, right? I mean, to picture what you could do in iMessage, summarize a message, or actually probably Apple Mail. They're going to build, you know, text summarization and helping you get started in there with some LLM, that kind of stuff, right?
They would have to, right? Or else what are they going to give up the ghost on, you know, the lady tubes?
Yeah. You know, it would be great if they... It's funny, in all of my speculation about what Apple's going to do with AI, I have not once considered them actually improving Siri, but that does seem to be the fundamental thing they should do. Yeah, they really should. And you know what? They should just push it out to the HomePods and make the HomePods better. We got a Spaceballs boost from Crashmaster.
So the combination is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the stupidest combination I ever heard in my life.
It feels like the future Meta headset VR Horizon OS story is going to be a strong one for consumers and specific applications in business. The App Store openness and general openness of Meta is a 180 degrees from Apple. And with Llama, they have a strong AI chat plan. If Meta doesn't screw it up, they may really separate from the pack in 5 years. I think I strong agree for the business case. You know, like you always make the case that some cheap Android tablets that you can sideload an APK are always going to be the go-to for, you know, if you need a bunch of tablets on the floor than $900 iPads or whatever. And that's probably going to hold true for headsets, right? Like if you need purpose-built headsets on the factory floor or in a construction place or in a, you know, mechanic shop or whatever it might be, you know, in a nuclear reactor, you're probably going to go for the one where you can get a free OS. You can even put your own damn app store on there if, you know, if you're like IBM and you're big enough where you actually have a large directory of applications. It's not going to be the Apple Vision Pro.
It's not going to be Apple Vision Pro, no.
I think that's insightful. Of course, Apple is going to try to argue otherwise. Stand by for that. You know what? Crashmaster also sent in a row of ducks and says, why do we need ChatGPT in our mouse and keyboard again? One more thing we need to block the corporate networks for compliance for. Yeah, I can't believe Logitech. That's got to be the peak. That's got to be the peak of bad. And our last on-air boost this week comes in from Infergo.
B-O-O-S-T.
5,000 sats on Podverse. Hey, guys, I'm not a small business owner, but I have been curious about it for years now and love hearing about it. The problem for me is getting started since I need income to sustain my family, and for that, I need my paid job. That leaves little time to get the initial setup ready to start my own thing, and so I keep daydreaming about my own business someday. Yeah, the side revenue, the transition revenue.
Yeah, that's a big step.
One of the more brilliant things that I've heard is, you know, I know somebody who set up some online courses that they can sell for a while they make a transition. I think that's pretty neat. Of course, side work, and it is so hard to actually fill that gap depending on what your expertise level is, though. Let us know how it goes, Infergo. Thank you, everybody who did boost in. We really appreciate it. We had 10 boosters across 17 boosts total, and we stacked 159,476 sats. Not too bad, although with the Adapocalypse, we could definitely use a bit more support. If you haven't tried out Fountain FM yet, they're going from strength to strength with the new release. They've really pepped it up. The Strike integration's better than ever, so it's super easy to boost. You can also boost from the Fountain FM website and just use any Lightning client you want. Strike, Cash App, you don't need a Podcasting 2.0 app. And Podverse, you just heard me mention that. That's a cross-platform GPL podcast player that has Android, iOS, and web client. Really nice. You can try them all. There's a bunch at podcastapps.com. And then you get all the new Podcasting 2.0 features, like you get the new release within 90 seconds of it coming out, live stream support, transcripts, chapters, and a whole bunch more. Podcastapps.com. Thank you, everybody who boosted in. Of course, thank you to our members, too, at coder.show/membership. We really appreciate you. I want to make sure. Is it coder.show/membership? Yep. Oh, yeah, there it is. Hey, look at that. Hey, look what I found. Isn't that great?
This is the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, everybody who supports the show. Mr. Dominic, is there anywhere you want to send the good peeps before we get out of here?
Yeah, go to alice.dev.
That's pretty straightforward. I like that. You know, do you think if they had the .dev domain, we would have done coder.dev back in
probably.
The day?
Probably. Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe. Coder.show rolls off the tongue.
That is true.
I'm Chris LAS on Weapon X, or you can find me on the Noister at chrislas.com. You just go there. It's a website, and it'll redirect you. It's really just a paying for domain to send you to a URL. It's my burden to carry, though. Speaking of URLs, coder.show/569 links to what we talked about today, including those videos and some of the extended versions. RSS feed is over there, the contact form. And we're live, usually. I think we're going to be live next Tuesday at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, if you'd like to join us at coder.show/live. Thank you so much, and we'll see you right back here next week.